Hello, Texans. Here we are, day two at the Combine, as far as interviews and things like that go, because we're on the row, media row, radio row, whatever you want to call it. We are here and catching up with guests, and we're going to start off with Nick Caserio in just a moment here. After the visit with Nick, John Harris and I will visit with Dave McGinnis. He was a former NFL head coach, played in the league, worked with Mike Ditka. He's a TCU alum, does Titans radio, a lot of opinions on the NFL, and then other stuff, including college football. We'll get into that with him and round out the show with Jordan Reed of ESPN. He's a draft evaluator. Now, we have John Harris, the best draft evaluator, but it's always good to get other people's opinions as well. So we'll do that with Jordan Reed to close out the show. What is he thinking at pick 23 for the Houston Texans? But I'd like to know what Nick Caserio is thinking of pick 23. Don't know if he's going to tell us that. Let's find out what he did tell us here as we visit with him on Radio Row at the Combine. Nick, first of all, what's it like for you going around the Combine? Are people congratulating you on a great season? What's that like?
Pats on the back, baby.
Other than John Harris, chest bumping me. So, no, it's been great. I mean, I think they're, are happy that some of the things that we did here this season. So it's always nice to hear, certainly appreciative, have a number of colleagues that have a lot of respect and admiration for. So D'Amico gets a lot of shout outs, so which is good. So it's good. So it's always good to be here in Indy.
So now you reset it. And I don't know if reset's the right word, but 2023 is now in the rear view. And I know that's probably been that way for you. I mean, we saw each other in Mobile. I know you're already, studying and you're into it, but how tough is it to kind of leave 2023 in the rear view? Because it was, from every single thing that you did last year, Nick, it came up roses, but there were so many good things. How tough is it to leave that behind and think 2024, we got to go?
Yeah, you have to, John, because each year kind of takes on a life of its own. We're always going to be able to look back, I would say, favorably about what took place in the 2023 season. It was pretty special.
Yep.
Had a lot of people that should be proud of what we accomplished. Always starts with the players and the coaches. Nobody's going to be able to take away the division title from us, but we also understand next year there's probably going to be more challenges that we're going to face. So we have to start to mentally prepare for those things. So once the season is over, players took some time, but I think a lot of our players have the appetite to get back to winning and the preparation. We've had 20 to 25 players in the building of their own volition, and they're just working out on their own at this point. So I think everybody is excited about the opportunity in front of us and ready to get back to work. And that's what the way the league is built, is you sort of have to have that mindset, because regardless of what happens the previous year, you can't really allow that to affect what's going to take place in the 24 season. So there's no time to sort of, sit on your ass and rest on your laurels. But nobody can take away what we accomplished, and we should all be proud of what we did.
Well, a huge part of the 2024 Texans will be built via free agency as well as last year, right? You had a lot of guys on one-year deals or whatever the situation might be, Nick. As you have 30-plus free agents ready to hit the market, whatever the number is, how is that process going? And that's really going to be a big part of it. It's not just quality. It is quantity in some ways. You need a lot of guys.
It's both, yes. So we have, I don't want to say, 52, 53 players currently under contract. We're going to get to 90 at some point here in the spring. So you really just kind of have to work through and try to communicate with all of the players in some capacity, whether or not we're interested or not, or just kind of where we stand. So start with that group. And then once we kind of have an idea of where we are in our players, that could potentially affect the decisions that we make about players that are outside of our building. So we're working through that now. I've had a number of conversations with agents and representatives, and that will continue here over the next few weeks. There's likely we're going to be some players that we sign back. There's going to be some players that move on or choose other opportunities, and we're prepared for everything. So we just have to sort of be prepared to adjust, and maybe we have to pivot in another direction. But we're hopeful that there's some players that played last year for us that we have a chance to get back on the team. We'll see how it goes.
Nick, there's always this interesting thing to me, like when we find out, when I say we, like the general public, that things change. For example, the salary cap comes out and it had been reported it's going to be a certain number, and then all of a sudden it comes out, it's like, whoa, it's not 245, it's 255. When you get knowledge of that, does that change kind of your mindset of like, wait a second, okay, I've got another $10 million to spend. How do you kind of look at that, that the salary cap has actually gone up beyond what people expected? Does it change the strategy at all when you found that information out?
Yeah, it doesn't drastically alter your approach. It just may give you the flexibility or optionality to add another player or two. Right. So that's what the additional dollars do. They just give you the opportunity to maybe add a player, because you try to create different categories and tiers. Okay, if we sign a player at this level, we can take X if we're this level. So, okay, when you add in an extra $10 million, maybe it opens up another area. So it's typically going to be probably in the middle somewhere, talking about one or two players, because really the cap charge the first year is likely not going to be prohibitive. So it just gives you another opportunity to add to kind of to Mark's question. Maybe it's an opportunity to add a player that we lose of this 30 or so players that are free agents. So it all fits together. I wouldn't say it was earth-shattering, but it just gives you maybe a little bit more flexibility.
Before we talk about combine and draftable players, what about combine and bumping into agents, conversations you might have? How much of that has gone on over the years or now or whatever the case may be, Nick, is you are able to have some face-to-face with people?
Sure. Every team's a little bit different.
Yeah.
I think the conversations that we have typically with agents is a little bit just more in passing. Hey, how's it going? Good to see you. Do you have any players here at the combine? Typically go through their college list, and they may give you your list. Hey, here's some players that are going to be available here in a few weeks. Typically, you know a lot of those players anyways,
yeah,
because you've been working on it here. Our pro scouting department has gone through free agency. We've built our board, so we know who is going to be sort of available for us to potentially sign. So essentially what the combine allows everybody to do, get everybody in one spot and, you know, have some degree of discussion and dialogue. But each team is going to probably handle a little bit differently about how much they actually get done relative to those discussions.
Nick, we were talking to D'Amico, and I actually brought up the question of, you know, just the interview process. And he brought it up unprompted. He talked about the college scouts. And he kind of looked down and he's like, man, the job those guys have done for the interviews that they brought in, the players that they brought in. How important is that to you, and obviously D'Amico, that you trust those guys, that when they're put in the room, those guys are Texans worthy, if you will?
No, it's huge. I mean, our guys do an unbelievable job. They invest so much time, so much energy. They work their ass off. They get good information. And what we have to do is just synthesize all that information. But it's very easy. D'Amico and I were flying over the other day, and we can have here are the players that we're interviewing, and then their profile is on an iPad, and you can go through and look at the background and kind of go back and familiarize yourself with that player. So they do an unbelievable job of sort of setting the table. And our interview process, we try to make it conversational. We're just trying to get a quick snapshot of the player.
Right.
Similar to every team is a little bit different with how they handle it. So we just try to make it kind of like the discussion that we're having here. Just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about your story. What are some of the things that are important to you? And you start to learn a little bit. And this is the first opportunity for our coaches. One, you know, it's different this year. We have some of the assistant coaches that are here, and it's really more not necessarily to watch the workouts, but to meet the player one-on-one, shake their hand, have a discussion, sit not too dissimilar to what we're doing with the 45 players that we can bring in our room. So, but, I mean, again, Lip, Zeke, John Richer, Brad Matthews, the area scouts, I mean, it starts on the ground level with them, and then the information kind of works its way down to us. And we're not for everybody. There's going to be certain players that we sort of eliminate because we know that they don't have the traits and characteristics that are going to work in our building. It's okay. But they take a very disciplined approach to it, and they synthesize it down, and then we're able to kind of work through it here in the spring.
Has it happened before where you sign a free agent and maybe you didn't draft the guy, but you did interview him at the combine years before and you know him a little bit from that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you typically will have some kind of backlog of information.
Mm-hmm.
I probably have notes on players that came out, you know, 10, 12 years ago, and then you've tracked them through the league. We have reports in our system, free agent reports on the system. So it's happened a number of times. I mean, it's funny, I was talking to somebody the other day about a player that I interviewed the East-West Shrine Game. You know, I mean, I interviewed, I'll never forget, I forget what All-Star game Eric Weddle was at. I want to say it was East-West, but it was one of the best discussions. And I was a young, I didn't really know anything. But he was so engaged in football. He was so smart. And I came away and walked away. And then you look at the arc of Eric's career, and it's funny. when we used to cross over and play, he'd always come over and say, hey, man, great to see you. So you're very appreciative and very that level of, there's a mutual respect. Sometimes they remember, sometimes they don't. You're not really seeking it out. But you can learn a lot about people, and anytime you have an interaction, you can use that as a part of your – now, by the same token, you talk to a player now, maybe he's changed 3-4 years. He's matured. You know, he's had a number of different things that have happened. So then you got to look and say, all right, was this the accurate picture? Will we have a little bit different information now? What's right? What's wrong? So any touch point is valuable, and we try to use it to our advantage as much as possible.
I don't know if you know this, but your quarterback's pretty good. You got him in last year's draft.
Heard of him.
So how does it change this year, Nick, knowing that you have CJ in hand, that you don't have to go through the quarterback search process versus every other player process? And I know you've talked about this many times. You study every prospect no matter what. But the fact that you don't need a quarterback, that it's already there, does that help the process? Is that because it eliminates other things? You could focus on some other things? How does that kind of go?
You can maybe shift and allocate your resources to another area. So now let's say the quarterback market, you're still going to be certainly aware or conscious of it. And there may be a player that maybe fills a different role. Like, we're fortunate to have CJ under center, and we know he's going to be there hopefully for a long period of time. But beyond that, you know, you look at a number of teams through the years have had multiple quarterbacks in their system. Not that you draft a quarterback every year, but, you know, I think it's certainly a position that teams place a high level of importance on, and they should. So it's just a matter of resource allocation, and you may be able to eliminate a certain pocket or group of players, John, and then kind of focus on some others.
Yep.
And you got to project what the draft might look like prior to your pick, right, so you can decide better what to do when that pick arrives.
There is a positioning element, no question about it. And by the same token, we're right now scheduled to pick, I think, 23rd. Mm-hmm. So if we trade up, there's always a cost associated with that. But if you don't trade up, you're probably going to – there's 15 or 20 players, you're probably really not going to have an opportunity to draft. So can you sort of accurately identify who those players are? It doesn't mean that they're not important. It doesn't mean that you wouldn't draft that player. It just means, well, the reality is probably not going to make it to our spot. Well, here's a group of players that we may have an opportunity to get. Let's focus our time and energy on those. So, we're a little bit different position this year than we were last year, and even in previous years as well. So
I'm pretty sure the Vegas odds will – have you not drafting at 23. I think if it's a safe bet, you're not drafting at 23. if history is our guide, there's no chance in hell you're drafting at 23.
We can't make a wager because I'll get fined and disciplined by the league.
No, I know. So. I know this has got to be an off the radio wager.
Last one, favorite drill to watch. Never mind important it is. What do you enjoy watching?
The skill drills are – The best ones to watch because they're a little bit more indicative. Receiver running a route. Yep. I say the defensive back drill, the gauntlet drill. Yep. Like, that's a good drill because they're running, they're catching, they're changing direction, they're tracking the ball. Mm. You can see some players have better skill than others. So I'd say some of the skill drills are good drills to watch, and you can actually gain a few things from them. There's certain drills. I mean, some of the offensive line drills, quite frankly, I mean,
okay. Could be changed.
Yes, they can be altered or adjusted.
If we put John Carroll, Nick Caserio in the 40 here, like back in the day.
Hopefully I would break 5 flat. I don't know, but hopefully.
All I know is the best thing I've ever seen in a pro day was at Texas A&M. I can't remember how many years ago this was. I watched Nick Caserio throw every route to the receiver. In between that, he's on the phone. Things moving bags around,
it
finishes the workout.
It coincided with free agency.
And it coincided with free agency. And that day, the Patriots signed somebody. I was like, that son of a buck made a deal in between throwing to the wide receivers at A&M and running the linebackers through drills.
The world is about multitasking.
It is.
Exactly.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, fellas. Appreciate you guys.
Right, there's our visit with the executive vice president and general manager, Nick Caserio. And this whole thing. This whole interview will be on Texans 360 this weekend. It'll be up on YouTube soon enough, and it'll be on podcast on HoustonTexans.com, the Texans app, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your fine podcasts. Coming up, a visit with Dave McGinnis, former NFL head coach. He does Titans Radio. He has a lot to say about the AFC South. We'll get into that, among other things, coming up on Texans Radio. In Indianapolis at the Scouting Combine, Mark Vandermeer, John Harris with you. And every year, lately, we like to visit with Dave McGinnis, who was an NFL head coach with Arizona, worked with the Titans for many years as a linebackers coach, worked with Mike Ditka back in the 80s on the Bears staff. I mean, he's been around the block, TCU alum. And he also does radio for the Tennessee Titans. He's the color commentator on the Titans Radio Network. So very cool always to visit with Dave McGinnis, get his opinions on the AFC South, the Titans, the NFL at large, and even college football. Let's go. Coach, great to see you as always.
Mark, John, it's always great to be on with you guys. I mean, this has kind of become a deal we do here at the Combine now, right?
Well, I always look forward to it. You know that, and I like seeing you in the booth as well prior to Texans-Titans games. And we had a couple of doozies as far as the Texans side went, and we were really grateful that the Titans beat the Jags in the finale because it helped the Texans win the division. And I was talking to Mike a little bit about that, Keith, the voice of the Titans, about that game. He said there was something really special in the air with Derrick Henry, the knowledge that that was probably it, all the fans coming out. How did you see that game for
Tennessee? It's very cool. You know, I've been lucky to be doing this. This is my 39th year in the league. And so, you know, I've seen that before. I was with the Bears when Walter, you know, was his last game. You know,
wow.
I was with the Cardinals with Emmitt. You know, I was with Singletary. I mean, I've seen this happen with great players, and what Derrick Henry's meant to the franchise, to the league, and as you well know, in the AFC South, and the Titans were having a rough year, you know, had a rough 2 years as far as injury wise, not winning enough games. You know how the league goes. You guys are vets in it too, but the love for him there has never waned, and you know, with the injuries and stuff. But I thought it was very special, and then he's such a class dude that. After the game, you know, he grabbed the mic and addressed the crowd. And we don't know what's going to happen yet. But just the fact, and plus, I mean, he was a big part of winning that football game. I mean, he started cranking out again, you know, and we all know the issues with the offensive line that they had. But Derrick Henry never waned. And I've got a real affinity for real professionals. You guys know this. Yep. I mean, I coached in this league for over 3 decades. And there's a difference between getting paid and being a professional. Mm. It's a huge difference.
Yep.
He's a pro. Yep. You guys have been with him too. Yeah, he's, you know, this guy's your head coach now is a former player. He was a pro, and there's a big difference. And so Derrick Henry, I mean, much respect.
Coach, the Titans for so long seemed as if the identity was Derrick and that offensive line. And obviously over the years we've seen the offensive line. Taylor gets hurt. Ben Jones, obviously concussions have been an issue. There have been other guys that moved in there, and you talked about the offensive line was not great last year. And so maybe we didn't see the real Derrick Henry because he was running behind an offensive line that was not up to standard of what it's been. But he's been the identity of that team. If he indeed is not there, what is the identity of the Titans going forward?
Well, they've got a new head coach now. You know, they got a new head coach in Brian Callahan, and that's, you know, it's going to be different. I've been through a lot of change in this league. I've been with, you know, when I was coaching with the Titans with Jeff Fisher, our identity was Eddie George.
Right.
Then we had CJ 2K. You know, that was the identity was running through there when Mike Heimerdinger was the offensive coordinator. That was still, you know, the identity of it. I think with a new head coach, and of course being an offensive coach and being what he is, we will wait to see. But I think regardless, guys, and you guys have been doing this a long time, there's always room for a good running back. You know?
Yeah.
But now Derrick carried the load, but just like Eddie carried the load, I was on the load. I was on the team with Walter Payton and the Bears. He carried the load, you know. But I think the National Football League is. You can do some, you know, some other things now, but Derrick Henry will still be, depending on wherever he is,
right.
He'll still be. But to have all the carries that he's had and still be able to maintain that, those are elite dudes. Those are elite and special dudes. You know, I had Emmitt Smith in the last years of his career when he left Dallas, and he still was a dude. You know, and so those guys are special. You guys have been around them too.
Yep. Dave McGinnis with us, former NFL head coach, member of Titans Radio, the color commentator. Will Levis, what do we expect year two?
Well, I think you can look at, you know, now with an offensive-minded head coach that was a quarterback coach. I mean, you know, development. I mean, you guys struck gold, you know, with a rookie quarterback this year that I think was just fabulous. He really was. And still, he's got a lot of growth potential, too, mm-hmm. in this league. But Will Levis has got tremendous growth potential. You could see early on, I mean, he's got the requisite skills that it takes, but he's not refined at all in it. You know, I think C.J. Stroud showed some refinement that surprised a lot of people, you know, really, if you want to be honest. And that to me is the National Football League nowadays, if you can find that dude that's on a rookie contract that can be a catalyst like that. But Will Levis is going to get better, but he's got what it takes. He's got what it takes physically, mentally. He loves it. He's a grinder, but he's kind of a wild horse rider. You know what I mean? I mean, there are times when he gets on the thing and he lets it roll. And so you've got to learn to rein. You don't want to rein all of that in, but you've got to rein some of it in because the dudes you're playing against react a lot quicker than the dudes that he's played against before.
You got to. I'm not sure the right way of saying this, but you got to prepare yourself for the Will Levis experience because it's like a roller coaster. There will be highs, but then you also know, man, and he showed it in our game. He makes that one throw across the middle, and it's like, whoa. And then the next throw, he throws it to our guy when he's got the guy deep wide open. And it's like that's kind of the Will Levis experience kind of going up and down. Coach, I don't know how much you can answer this one, but I'm going to ask it anyways
sure.
because obviously he was with us in Houston, and he carries such clout throughout this league. And that's Mike Vrabel. Why in the end did it come to the end for Mike in Tennessee?
Yeah, I'm not in those meetings anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in those meetings for 31 years, so I would know. But to me, it always will come down to in this league, you know, if it comes down to a difference between the ownership and the head coach, the owner's going to win every time.
Right.
That's just life in this mm-hmm. league. Specifics, I don't know. Mike Vrabel's a good football coach.
Yep.
He's a good football coach. But, and just because, look, I've just got through doing a lot of Arizona radio out there. They still love me back there, but they fired me. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
I mean, seriously.
I was with Mike Ditka when Mike Ditka was fired. So that's just a life you live in this league as a head coach. Mm. When you've ascended to that part, you know that. And so, as they say, what do they say? It's not personal, it's business.
Yeah. Yep.
That's probably what it is.
Yeah.
All right, Dave McGinnis joining us, former NFL coach and Titans radio color commentator. A lot of talk about changing the offseason again, and I don't know if they can get this done before the next CBA, but maybe shortening the offseason program, getting to camp early. That's one of the ideas floating around out there. But the way it is now, a lot of coaches don't even like this. You get the 9-week program. Virtually no contact, but you can do a little bit. And then in camp, the reduction of padded practices, things like that with the latest CBA. Your thoughts on how they're getting players ready for the season now? You have a 17-game season. Where are we going? Where should it be, Coach?
Well, look, you guys have been in this a long time. I've probably been in it longer. I remember when I first got in the league with Mike Ditka, we would go to Platteville, Wisconsin, and as soon as practice started the first day, until we ended, twice a day in pads, full pads every day, 9-on-7 to start practice every day. Okay? I mean, that was the life you led. That's just what you did. That's what you did. The league has changed and evolved. It doesn't, to me, as long as everybody's got the same rules. Mm-hmm. See, what happened is, guys, is what started happening, and when remember when Jimmy Johnson came into the league? Well, you know, Jimmy Johnson, you know, those guys had a marvelous career with Dave Wannstedt and those guys down in Miami. Well, he started doing off-season things that nobody had ever done in the National Football League, and all of a sudden everybody else went, well, wait a minute. You know, why can they? So that's where all the, you know, all of this started coming in. And then you get the NFLPA involved. And now as long as everybody is under the same purview of rules.
Right.
I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it because to me, and I'm old school enough to go back to those days, but I'm also progressive enough not to think, you know what, we went full pad twice a day for 6 weeks in camp, and hitting every day. So why can't you don't? That's not what you do now. You just don't do that now. And the other thing is too, asset allocation in this league is so much more than it used to be as far as players go. And that was back before free agency. It was just a different world. This is the world we live in now. So as long as everybody's got the same rules and follows the same protocols, I don't care.
Coach, you've seen not only the NFL, but you've seen every other league that has been in existence.
Yes, I have.
So now we see the XFL and the USFL coming together to become the UFL. And we saw some – so, like, we had a successful – we had Khalil Davis play defensive tackle for us.
Yes.
Who had played for the Birmingham Stallions, won USFL, and, like, 2 weeks later he's in our camp. And we're like, I don't know, what's this guy going to bring us? And he ends up being a vital piece of our team. Do you think the UFL, those two coming together, do you think that can work?
Yeah, I do if they don't get out over their skis financially. I mean, I was involved with the Alliance with Jeff Fisher. You know, we would go down there to Birmingham, you know, with the Iron, but that was the closest we were. Joe Pendry was the general manager, and you know, Bill Polian was involved. And so I was on the inside of that, you know, go down there to see it. Mort's son was coaching, was coaching there, so I would be with Mort down there and see all the stuff that was going on, Chris Mortensen I'm talking about. There's a place for it. Now, there's not enough – all of these supplemental leagues, when you look at them, guys, the thing that always throws it back is two things. It's the number of offensive linemen that are viable and available to keep a quarterback upright, and then the quarterbacks, because there's just not enough of those humans in the league that have to be big enough to be an offensive lineman that can move their feet in the world, because most of them, if they can do that, they're in this league. Mm-hmm. And you know that that's true.
Yep.
But I think there's a spot for it. You can develop players. I mean, it's been proven. I was coaching the National Football League when we had to allocate six players a year to the World League. All right? Mm. And you could develop – the two things you could develop out of that league, you could develop quarterbacks, and you could also develop officials.
Oh.
And that was a huge proving ground to develop officials out there, which – there's still a need for that. Terry Killens, who just got through, who played with Tennessee, was played for Jeff Fisher on that Super Bowl team.
Yep.
Was an umpire in the Super Bowl. Well, I saw Terry when he was calling games in the Alliance. You know, he had worked his way up through, but it was a way to prove yourself and to also because you all of us have got to be honing our skills, whatever we're doing. So, is there a place for it? Absolutely. Just if they don't get out over their skis financially. That's what shut the Alliance down early, is that, you know, that they were kind of ginning. But the money is the part that always stops it. I mean, I can remember way back when I graduated from TCU, you know, had a chance to go play with the Hawaiian team in the World Football. Remember that
one they had? Absolutely.
So come on, guys. I've been through it all. But it's still money. Yep. Money and money management. It's what makes it work.
There was a Houston Texans in the World Football League in the 1970s. Dave McGinnis joining us, former NFL coach and Titans radio color commentator. Your perspective on Jacksonville, because they had a great 2022, bad start, great finish. 2023, great start, bad finish. Where are they going from here, Coach? What do you think of the Jags?
Still got players. They've had players. And again, I'm talking here. We're talking real football in this league. If you have down years in consecutive times, which y'all went through too, you had down, and you draft well because you're drafting in the top five or six in every round, not just the first round. People got to understand that. And, you know, I've vetted 39 drafts. It's easy to disseminate the top players of every round. That's easy. Mm. What's hard is when you're drafting at the bottom of rounds consecutive years, because then all of a sudden the comparison and trying to vet those guys, that's where it comes in. Mm-hmm. So if you're able to get enough real good draft picks that are working, then all of a sudden you hit on a young quarterback, and then you can go. So they've still got players. But, guys, I really think in a 17-week season now, you're going to see some of these hills and valleys because it's hard. It is hard, first of all, numbers-wise, to keep everybody healthy that long. And then, number two, it's really hard to stay here mentally the whole – I mean, as far as just ginning up your motors you know, every week if you're healthy or not. So you're going to see this type of thing in this league now, because, to me – Even Kansas City that won it all this year. You remember there was a time during the season. You guys both know it. You guys are pros at this, and you know where you got. So I think Jacksonville still got players. I mean, and they've got players, and they haven't forgotten how to coach. You know, it's just like, you know, Houston has had players for a few years, but you went through a series of 1 year head coaches, which is hard to get anything, you know, generated on the tracks. Once you got something solidified there going. then you can kind of catch fire, just like what you guys did, which that's the league now. That is going to be the league now.
Coach, you mentioned offensive line earlier.
Yeah.
Brian Callahan comes over, and he brings his dad.
Wow, yeah.
And I've always thought about what it would be like to coach with my dad, and I don't know that we could ever do it. But I give the Browns credit. The Browns said, look, Brian, you want him, you got Bill, and he's one of the best guys in the business on the offensive line. What does it mean to the Titans that Bill comes along with Brian?
I mean, that's legitimate. I mean, Bill Callahan, I've coached against Bill for years, but he's a legitimate dude. But he's one of the best and known league-wide as one of the best. And plus, I think it's – and you, I'm glad you brought that up. It was really – because he was under contract with Cleveland. We all know how the contract situation works with coaches. When I was coaching, you know, I was under contract and missed a lot of chance – not right. A lot, three or four chances to go someplace else because
sure.
I was under contract. You can't go.
Right.
You know, you guys been in the league long enough to know when they used to put a tag on coaches. You used to have one tag where a coach couldn't leave. Yeah. I mean, so anyway, but for them to allow him to and understand how really unique this was, but you just talk about on just the practical side of it and the operational side of it, to have Bill Callahan to come in to a team that needs development of offensive linemen and your son is the head coach, it's really unique, and I think it's very, very cool. You got to tip your hat to the Cleveland Browns, first of all, yep. to say that, because this is a business, and you know there's not a lot of sentimentality in this league. I mean, there's just not,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
They're just not.
Exactly.
It's not. I've lived it. But for that, I think it's very cool. Plus, it's warranted because Bill Callahan is special.
Former NFL coach Dave McGinnis joining us, member of Titans Radio, the color commentator of the Titans Radio booth with voice Mike Keith. Coach, college football, it's a mess right now with the NIL, with the portal, with free agency every year. And I don't know if you have any thoughts on how to fix it. I think it does affect the NFL some because you have fewer underclassmen declaring themselves eligible. And maybe some need to stay in school, but some maybe would have done pretty well in the NFL, but they might do better financially staying an extra year in college. Your thoughts on the whole thing?
First of all, it's not a mess if you have money.
Okay.
All right? It's if you don't have money that all of a sudden it's a mess. I've still got contacts all over the country in collegiate football, and if you're that upper echelon now, that there's a separation now.
Mm-hmm.
The guys that are it's first of all, I coached major college football for 13 years before Mike Ditka hired me. I'm not sure I could coach in college football right now. I mean, it's a 12-month out of the year grind job because you not only have to recruit forever, but you have to continue to recruit to keep them on your team. The NIL, and I'm all for the NIL stuff, and it's the NCAA. You know, I've always had issues with the NCAA. Mm-hmm. When I was coaching in college, you talk about people that are over officious in things that don't matter.
Right.
And then all of a sudden when something that does matter, they can't make a decision. And now you've seen what happened. You know, just with the lawsuit that the University of Tennessee and Virginia put together.
Yep.
I mean, it's over. That stuff is over now. So I'm all for what's going on, but I think sooner or later, you know, there's going to have to be some regulation. But I think that the major conferences, and we know sooner or later, guys, there's only going to be two or three of them. That's mm-hmm. what's going to be. They're going to have to regulate it. They'll have to regulate it because pretty soon what will happen is, and you guys know this league is able to work because there's a collective bargaining agreement.
Correct.
That's why this league can work. So everybody has got money and everybody's trying to get, but you've got parameters.
Yep.
There are no parameters right now
yep.
as far as to what's going on. But as far as am I for it? I'm all for it. It's the lower tier schools that are really, really hurting. And talking with those guys, I recruited, you know, high school kids for college, for universities for 13 years. There's a difference in evaluating a 17 and 18 year old and projecting than there is, you know, a 19 to 20 year old. What's happening now is basically these smaller schools are feeder systems now for the bigger schools
yep.
because they'll take a chance on a kid out of high school. Then they you can watch them develop, and all of a sudden it's easier, you know, to profile them and get them into your place. It lessens the risk that you're taking when you're finding someone that's proven themselves at a lower collegiate level. So it will even itself out. But those Power Five schools that are the major decision makers, they're going to have to regulate it because the NCAA is out of it.
Coach, last one from me.
Yeah.
from an opponent's perspective, we had something really cool happen Super Bowl week. Andre Johnson goes into the Hall of Fame.
Yo, what a stud.
What are your thoughts about Andre Johnson just from an opponent's perspective of seeing him twice a year? What Andre Johnson, Hall of Famer. It's great to be able to say that, Andre Johnson, Hall of Famer.
What a dude. Stud. I was a defensive coach getting ready for Andre Johnson. That's one of the first guys who you put up on the board, you know, on Tuesday when you started game planning, and then on Wednesday when you present to a team. This dude, you have to stop. This dude is the dude you have to stop. Whatever you have to do, you know, lifetime, you know, a long-time defensive coordinator in this league, this would be a guy. Yes. And it was a guy, and he was. And even with that, to still produce like he did, I mean, we can still remember, you know, of course, if you remember the row that we had with he and Cortland Finnegan, you know.
Yep. Well,
we'd gotten Cortland all gunned up that week about, you know, about Andre. But Andre Johnson was a pro, man. He was a pro. And just put it – and I didn't know him personally, but just seeing and talking with people, y'all were around him, I mean, you know, just a legitimate person, legitimate human being. He is a Hall of Famer, and he is now. But he put together a Hall of Fame career. But I've been at this long enough to know there are some guys that are exceptional, and then there are some guys that are dudes.
Yeah.
He was a dude.
Former NFL coach, TCU alum, Titans Radio color commentator. Thanks a lot, Coach. We appreciate
it. Guys, you're the best. It's always fun with you guys.
All right, there's our visit with Dave McGinnis, who formerly is the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, linebackers coach with Tennessee, a whole bunch of other stuff, including working on the Titans Radio broadcasts weekly during the season. And, of course, like we mentioned, working in the USFL and other things. So, next up, draft evaluation. We know we have John Harris. Sorry, Johnny. We're gonna roam a bit. We've got the wandering eye or ear today with Jordan Reed of ESPN. He's a draft evaluator. Let's get his thoughts on this class, on last year's class, because it's very relevant to us, of course. What he thinks of the Texans' plans at 23, some possibilities there, and whatever else comes up. That's next here on Texans All Access. Back to it here on Texans Radio. I pointed this out last night, but just so you know, the workouts for the combine don't happen right away. In other words, you get here early in the week, teams are interviewing players, we're interviewing people in the media and coaches and GMs. We heard from Nick Caserio earlier this hour, heard from D'Amico Ryans last night. That whole conversation is up on HoustonTexans.com, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get podcasts, in Tuesday's episode of Texans All Access. And parts of it will be up on Texans 360 on Saturday night, ABC 13. That'll be available on YouTube as well. As you know, I like to promote things. Anyway, player workouts getting started now as we enter the later in the week period. And we don't really focus on those as much as what's going on around the league. What are the likely scenarios and maybe far-fetched scenarios for the Houston Texans in free agency and the draft? Things like that. Well, we're about to hear from a draft evaluator, not Johnny Harris. We've strayed. We've gone to ESPN. Jordan Reed, draft analyst for ESPN, formerly of the Draft Network, played college football at North Carolina Central. Let's let him tell the story as we catch up with Jordan from ESPN. Jordan, how's it going?
It's great to be here. I'm so excited. This is like Christmas time for me, being around the combine, being around these draft prospects, and just realizing that they're reaching their dreams.
All right, before we get into the nitty-gritty here, when did you know you wanted to get into this? Because you played at North Carolina Central. You coached as well. You started to get into the draft evaluation. How did all that go for you leading up to ESPN?
That's the first question everybody asked me when talking about ESPN, and I kind of just fell into the media space. I was a player for 4 years at North Carolina Central from 2010 to 2013, went right into coaching after that. So I did the graduate assistant route and then to full-time assistant coach at Central. But in 2018, I had a family, so I had twin daughters. They're actually starting kindergarten this year, so time is going fast, and I wanted to be there. I wanted to be the family man, and I wanted to get into journalism. That's something that I'd never been able to take serious just because I was so focused on my playing career and then my coaching career. So I wanted to figure out a way to combine my love for writing, my love for the NFL draft, and the course of football as well. So took a chance, started a Twitter account, started posting voiceover clips talking about prospects, strengths, and weaknesses, and then it just took off for me after that. And I worked for a small company called the Draft Network I worked there for 2 years, and then ESPN came out of nowhere, and they hired me right after that.
Awesome. Jordan Reed of ESPN joining us. So as you evaluate prospects, and I work with John Harris, who does a lot of work in this area as well. As you evaluate prospects, you got to go back and look, right? How did I do? Yeah. Was I right? Was I wrong? And look, everybody in the NFL, I don't know what the batting average is or a good one, but how do you go about that, the evaluation and refining what you do?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, and it kind of is like a batting average. If you're getting 30 to 35% right, you're probably pretty good at this draft stuff. You're never going to get 50% or anything above that unless you're like the Texans, you're just knocking it out the park every single year. But I think when you're talking about evaluating this prospects, whether you fail or you hit on a prospect, you want to take little bits and pieces of information from what you got wrong or maybe what you got right, just so you're not making those same mistakes twice on a prospect year after year.
Jordan, what did you think of C.J. Stroud going into last year's draft and how it's working out for him so far?
I mean, I love C.J. coming out. Him and Bryce. I did have Bryce 1, I will say that, but I had C.J. 2 right after that. And just the traits that C.J. showed at Ohio State. You talk about how cerebral he is, his leadership, his accuracy, and just how pro-ready he was at Ohio State. And you saw that translate. Now, I don't think anybody saw this type of year coming from C.J. Stroud as far as having arguably the best rookie season ever for a quarterback. But as far as the traits and just how pro-ready he was at Ohio State, I thought he was the best from a pro-ready standpoint.
All right, what about Richardson going in? And I know he didn't play much, but he played some, and we saw some good things from him. What about moving ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I loved him when he was coming out. And you talk about the traits that he did have and just the arm strength that he has. You saw it a lot of times at Florida, but the sample size wasn't huge as far as a starter. Only started 13 games when he was coming out as a rookie. So it was just the sample size that worried you about him. But the traits, I mean, we saw it here last year. He had the best combine for a quarterback last year. So he just needed to go and be paired with somebody that was able to get all those traits out of him just because the sample size was so small. And then he basically is a baby at the position. He didn't have a lot of reps.
Jordan Reed works the draft for ESPN, joining us on Texans Radio. All right, a couple of more quarterback questions relative to this year, because Caleb Williams, obviously everybody's on fire for Caleb Williams. I know you get asked about him all the time. What are your thoughts coming into this one, and who do you have two behind him, if you have him number one? I don't want to presume.
Yeah, I do. He's actually my second-ranked overall player in the draft. He's my top-ranked quarterback.
Is Caleb Marvin Harrison number one?
He is.
Okay.
I'm a big Marvin fan. I think he's the best player in the draft. But just speaking on Caleb, we talk about a lot of those translatable traits with CJ. You see a lot of those translatable traits in Caleb as far as him being able to win inside and outside of the pocket, the arm strength, the accuracy. And there are some things that he does need to clean up. He does a lot of what I call sandlot football, where he's just playing in the backyard, running around, and just trying to make plays. But there are some variables behind that, just because of the defense giving up 35 to 40 points a game. He felt as if he had to make plays all the time. But when he does settle down, he does make plays inside the pocket, but we just need to see that more consistently. We didn't see that enough from him last season just because that Superman mode was always in overdrive with him. So whether it's the Bears or whoever does select him with the number one overall pick, I think we're going to see more of what we saw during his Heisman campaign.
Then you like who after that quarterback-wise? Drake May?
Yeah, I like Drake May. He's my second-ranked quarterback. And once again, prototypical size, 6'4", 230 pounds, very powerful arm, really accurate. But his lower half and his lower body does need to be more consistent. And there are some frustrating things with Drake, but he has about 5 or 6 plays a game of where he reminds you of why he's getting these Josh Allen and Justin Herbert comparisons, just because he has those physical traits that you love to see at the position.
All right, so the Texans pick 23rd. I know that's getting down there. And when we project these things, nobody knows about trades, how that's going to affect things, needs. We know some things about that, but free agency is going to tell us a whole lot more. But let's just say, can you give me a defensive lineman, one or two guys who might be available there that they might be interested in? Latu is a popular mocked player to the Texans at 23. What do you think overall there?
Yeah, well, I think probably 2 or 3 of those top 3 guys probably will be gone, whether it's Jerry Verse, Leatu Latu, or Dallas Turner. So cross your fingers they could be there at 23, but I wouldn't put my hopes into any of those guys being there. So now we're getting into that second tier of rushers, whether it's a Chop Robinson of Penn State. I think he would be a really good pairing alongside Will Anderson Jr. One name I think is really going to climb boards is Adisa Isaac from Penn State. So he's one name, maybe not at 23, but if they trade back and look to pick a player late first or early second round, those are two players. The Penn State duo, I think, would be a really good pairing.
Jordan Reed of ESPN joining us. As you watch the combine drills, does that affect your preparation? We talked to GMs. They get to interview the players for a long time. They get those 20-minute sessions. We'd all love those. You get to see a little podium,
yeah.
And maybe that gives you something. But you tell me, do your evaluations change or get adjusted based on some things you've seen here?
Well, it wouldn't change. What I would say about the combine is use it to confirm or deny what you saw on tape. So if a receiver has some drop issues and they do struggle on tape, when they're going through the gauntlet drill and they're going through these routes with the quarterbacks, are they struggling to catch the ball? Are they double catching it? Just so that confirms what you saw on film and why they struggle catching the ball with defensive backs. Another great example of if they have smooth transitions, do they have fluid hips on tape? Does that match what we saw during the positional drill? So really use the combine to confirm or deny what you saw on tape.
That is excellent stuff. Jordan, we really appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much.
Thank you as always.
There's Jordan Reed of ESPN. You can read his stuff on ESPN.com and see him on their coverage. But when the draft arrives, just listen to us here on Texans Radio with Johnny Harris doing all 16 hours of draft coverage. And I will do something like 12 plus, something like that. In the next couple of days from the Combine, you're going to hear from, among others, Greg Cosell of NFL Films, Rhett Lewis of NFL Network, Andrew Siciliano of NFL Network, and more guests than that. So stay tuned the next couple of days. Stay tuned to this very station because coming up, it's Area 45 with Sean and Patrick. Don't miss it. Have a great night. Go Texans.